Good morning. Nice and cold outside, but no snow around here. I know that disappointed a lot of the kids and some adults as well. We've got some really good friends up north of here that are still digging out. And I've got to tell you, if I had the choice of having it only cold with no snow or cold with snow, I think we're better off right now. It's cold and we don't have to shovel anything. We don't have to worry about sliding off into a ditch. And so we're in good shape. I want to really commend you for coming out this morning. I know that the bitter cold is a real challenge, and we appreciate you being here. As we get started this morning, I also want to encourage you with a couple of opportunities. One, at 1:30 today, we have the honor of hosting the Montreat Devotional. And so if you'd like to join us over there at 1:30 today, you can help us with our service as we go with the residents there. Also, there's a sign-up sheet that's mentioned in the bulletin. The sign-up sheet is out here in the foyer. And that's for those that would like to help us in organizing various stages of our visitation program. I was very encouraged last Sunday afternoon that 52 of you showed up and joined us in that organizational kickoff meeting. And so a sign-up sheet is out there. If you'd like to help, just sign your name. And in the next week and 2 weeks, I'll be working with these individual groups, and we'll get that off the ground. Be an encourager. I like to have encouraging people around me. I like to surround myself with people that aren't yes people, but that are encouraging people. I want people to see me for who I am, but also I want people to see me for what I can become. And having encouragement in your life can make a tremendous difference in your life. I remember in high school, I had a French teacher in high school, and I was part of the French club, and we had to raise some money. And so we were diligently working on a few projects, and she brought me off to the side one day, and she said, "Mike, I perceive that you are an entrepreneur." I thought it was an insult. I didn't know what the word meant. I had to go look it up first, Joe. Well, once I understood what it was, well, I thought, well, that's a great compliment. She saw something in me that where I could see a goal and see it through all the problems and help to guide us to that point and stuff. So she said, "You're going to go far. You're going to do well in things because you have an entrepreneurial spirit." Well, she encouraged me. She saw potential in me, and she voiced that. Because she did, that helped instill some confidence in me. Well, what about in your life? Don't you have some people that are great encouragers to you? I mean, sometimes we're really, really blessed to have a great coach or a teacher, and especially our parents and grandparents around us that build us up and tell us what a great job this is or what great potential we have. But sometimes we don't always have that positive spirit. Sometimes we'll have this kind of notion of, well, you know, you'll never amount to anything. Well, now, how much good do you think is going to come from a family if the mom and dad see little Johnny or Susie as they come home from school and they say, "Well, I guess you failed that test again, didn't you? Well, you know, you're just never going to get this spelling right. I don't think you could add if you had to. You'll just never amount to anything." Negative, negative, negative. You know, before long, that little child is going to start believing those things and say, "You know, I can't do this because my mom and dad have already told me I'm not going to amount to anything. The bar is set so low, I've already accomplished it. I don't even have to try. What's the point of doing anything else?" We might also get this notion of, "Well, don't even try that. It won't work." You know, if we don't fail at times in trying to do something, we'll really never succeed in anything worthwhile. Henry Ford was quoted as saying the following. I want to read this so I get it right. "Failure is the opportunity to begin again more intelligently." Failure is the opportunity to begin again more intelligently. You know, there'll be times that we do things as parents that we say, "Well, that didn't work out too well." That's fine. The next time you face that situation, you'll find a better way of doing it. You'll begin again and do so more intelligently. And so as we go through life, we've got to accept there are going to be things that we fail at. There are going to be things that we're not as successful as we'd like to be in. But there will be opportunities for us to reach even farther if we have some encouragement about us. Thomas Edison, of course, didn't invent the light bulb, but he invented a longer-lasting filament. And he went through thousands of opportunities, failures of those filaments, until he hit upon the one that would be in what we now see as the incandescent light. Now, Edison looked back on those failures, and he didn't see that as a bad thing. He saw that as a good thing. "I've eliminated all these thousands of possibilities, and now I'm ready to find the one that's there." So when we think about the possibilities, I want us, playing on this theme again, to dare to dream. Dare to dream about what the possibilities might become for us. And this lesson today is on encouragement. encouragement. Overcome discouragement with encouragement. Now, you may have heard about this fellow before, Walt Disney. Have you ever heard of Walt Disney? My sister and her family went down to Disney World around Christmas time. And ever since then, I've been thinking about Walt Disney World, and all the Magic Kingdom and the Imagineering and all the things that go on. But did you know that Walt Disney at one point was working for a newspaper? You know, he was an artist. He sketched things. He was an illustrator. But before all that, he worked for a newspaper. And you know, he lost his job at the newspaper. And the reason was that he lacked imagination. Can you imagine that? Walt Disney lacked imagination in that job. And so rather than being discouraged over that, he kept working on other things until he found a way to make that work for him. I want us to think of the possibilities of what can become. I appreciate so much each and every one of you, the fine prayers that are offered here, and the fact that we do have some work to do, that we do have some issues to work through, but together we can do those things. Now, this book that's being shown up on the screen is The Barnabas Factor. It's an older book written by my friend Aubrey Johnson. And it's talking about the power of encouragement and how having a spirit of an encourager can help to transform not only you but also the church around you. So very quickly, just as a summary of this, he talks about some of these things. For example, having the mind thinking good, pure, and positive thoughts. You know, what we think and what we focus on will be a large part of who we become. And so if we are obsessed with sports, or if we're obsessed with politics, or if we're obsessed with other aspects of life, that becomes a part of our character and part of who we are. As far as being an encourager for Christ, let's set our mind on thinking the good, the pure, and the positive thoughts about the situations around us. I know that we're not always going to see good, but let's look for the good. Secondly, having eyes that perceive the good in every situation. Perceive the good in every situation. Have you ever known somebody that was always so negative about everything? I mean, it didn't matter how good it was. I mean, they could have been out there, and I don't advocate gambling, but they might have won the lottery. And here they are. They won the lottery. They won $1 million. And if you talk to them, they'd be so negative to say, do you know how much I have to pay in taxes? Do you know how many people are going to come around asking for money from me? Do you know how many? Well, why did you even try? Why did you even bother to better yourself in that situation if all you're going to do is look on the negative? You've got to have eyes that perceive the good in every situation. Ears that are actively and enthusiastically listening. When James tells us that we ought to be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath or anger, he's talking to us. He says, you need to be quick to listen. Be attentive to other people. Be attentive to their situations. Don't always be looking to jump in with your thoughts and what's going on in your life, but listen to what they say. And we can listen to people around us and know if they're hurting, if they're struggling, if they need that pat on the back, and if they need that encouragement that will help them. Also, to have our lips, our mouths that will verbally communicate respect and confidence. I want to build people up. I want you to build people up as well. And as a church together, we can have these attributes of the mind, the eyes, the ears, the lips, and also of our hands to sense those good opportunities and to seize upon them to do good. I'm so proud of this church and so proud of its good workers here. We have many good programs of work. The room at the end, I've mentioned it before, I'll mention it again this morning. The room at the end does a tremendous job. And last Thursday night we had what was expected to be our largest group. It was a little bit smaller, but still over 20 people that were hosted there. And looking at all the volunteers, everybody just falls into place. It's a well-organized process. And the ladies, the men that are there, the young people as well, they're helping. They're setting up the cots. They're preparing the food. They're serving the people that are there. And do you know that the people that come as a part of the room at the end, they're people just like you and me. They're different parts of their life, different stages. They've hit a rough spot, but they're trying to get better. And I know that some people have a preconceived notion of what it might be to be without a permanent home all the time. But listen, these are individuals that deserve and expect some encouragement from us. And they get it when they come here. They're very thoughtful and they're very thankful for what's going on. But when we think about these aspects of us, why would we do any of this? Well, let's go back to our reading that was read to us a few moments ago. And let's go back here. Bruce read this from Hebrews chapter 3, verses 12 and 13. Why should I be an encourager? Why should I think about this? Why should you want to be an encourager? Well, the writer of Hebrews says, beware, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. but exhort, that is, encourage one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. We need to encourage one another because there might come a time when that lack of encouragement allows us to fall away from the truth and to slide into an apostasy. Now, those are big terms and stuff when we think about sliding away and apostasy. And, well, you know, preacher, if I'm just not as committed, that doesn't mean I'm apostate. But it's the road to that. And what can happen is that the lack of encouragement can hasten that road. Well, I've got several different hit, and let's go points. And so this morning, let's begin with Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12 as we think about how we can become an encourager. I need us to be encouragers, all of us to be encouragers. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12. We'll know this as the golden rule. Encourage others the way that you want to be encouraged. Jesus says in this verse, therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Now, this is from Jesus. This is what he gives us as a directive. Whatever you want others to do to you, you do first to them. And we sometimes twist that around and say, do unto others before they do unto you. Well, that's not right. Listen, we need to treat others the way that we want to be treated. If you go into a restaurant, you want to be treated in a certain way by the ones that come and serve you. You need to treat others with the same type of respect and care and concern. When you go into a difficult patch in your life, you want others to surround you with love and concern, compassion, and encouragement. Well, you need to show that also to others that are going through those things. Now, next is Luke chapter 6, and it's a similar thread here. Luke chapter 6, verse 38. And we're going to go pretty quickly through these, and I appreciate you keeping up with us. Luke chapter 6 and verse 38. People are inclined to treat you the way that you treat them. Well, that's true. Now, in this section, Jesus says, give, and it will be given to you, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be put into your bosom. For with the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you. Well, these are very similar in thought, but a little bit different. First, Jesus is saying, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Then he's saying, look, the way that you treat others, that's going to come back on you as well. Carla and I had an elder years ago, and he's a good friend of D.Mar Elam's. He served with him before. He's an elder now in North Georgia. And he used to go out with Jack Exum's Three Unusual Days, talking about giving. And I remember those lessons that Callan gave, and he'd have these little scoops, like a little scoop that you'd take jelly beans out of the jar with, this little scoop, and he'd talk about how we give to God and how what we give we get back. And he'd have this little bitty scoop, and he'd show that and have this conversation with God. Okay, well, if I give this, you're going to give this back. Okay, well, what if I had a bigger scoop? What are you going to do then? And he'd pull out a bigger scoop, and he kept on until he had like a big shovel-sized scoop showing that, look, I can't outgive God. And what this passage is telling us is that the more that we treat others in a positive way with goodness, we're going to receive that back as well. Why should I want to be an encourager? Well, I want to be treated in this way. Those are the first 2 points here. Let's go over to Philippians chapter 1. And let's look at another passage here dealing with how we're going to be doing. Philippians chapter 1, verses 20 through 25. According to my earnest expectation and hope that in nothing I shall be ashamed, but with all boldness, as always, so now also Christ will be magnified in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. But if I live on in the flesh, this will mean fruit from my labor. Yet what I shall choose I cannot tell. For I am hard-pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and to be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you. And being confident of this, I know that I shall remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy and faith. Our talents, our ability to influence the lives of others, this is all a part of the storehouse that God's given to us. And so we can be a real inspiration for others around us. Paul here is talking about, I'm not really sure what I'm going to end up doing. And here I'm in prison. Some people are preaching to undermine the influence that is there. And that's fine as long as Christ is preached. He's okay with that. That's earlier in chapter 1. And here in this section, he's saying, I really want to go on and be with Christ, but I know it's more needful for me to be here. And what's the whole crux of this? The crux is Paul realizes that he is still a valuable part of the equation of encouraging others and helping them to become what they can become in life. And some of you may think, well, I don't think I can do any of this anymore, preacher. You know, I've been around for a long time, and I may have reached my limit of usefulness. Well, I don't think that's the case. I've walked down the halls here to check on the World Bible School class as they're working in there. And there will be 20, 25 people maybe working in there, all kinds of age ranges. I've also seen some people working on cards and notes and phone calls that they're sending back and forth. We had a lady at River Road in Nashville years ago, Ann Chenault, and she was one of the best people I've ever known for keeping up with people. She had had polio as a child and later got to where she couldn't get out at all. But she knew more about what was going on in church, as she would call and write notes and encourage others. Listen, let me tell you something. Your time and your talents, your abilities that you already have are wonderfully important things. And we share them with others and we encourage others. Let's go to Mark chapter 12. Mark chapter 12 now, and in verses 29 through 31. We all make decisions based on priorities in life. And when we do so, we always run the risk of getting the priorities wrong. In this section, it's going to be very familiar to us, but let's think about what this means. Jesus answered him and said, "The first of all the commandments is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, with all your strength. And this is the first commandment. And the second like it is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, and there is no other commandment greater than these." If we prize people above everything else other than God, faithfulness to God, a funny thing starts to happen. We start to realize how important other people are. If we were all on an ocean liner going on a cruise, and if we hit the, you know, if we're on the Titanic, let's say, and we hit that iceberg, we know what's going to happen. We've got all these people and not enough lifeboats. What do you think's going to happen? If you could go back in time to the Titanic, and if you knew the outcome of that, how strongly do you think you would be begging and pleading people to be on those initial life rafts? How strongly do you think you'd be trying to wake up that captain of the ship and others to have them to steer clear and to halt the engines and not even have that obstacle to be hit in the way? How strongly do you think that you would care for others, or do you think you would be content with sitting back, going ahead to sit in a lifeboat, and just wait for the time that your boat was lowered and put into the water? I dare say that any of us, with a human strain of kindness in us and any kind of concern for another, any of us would see that situation and say, people are going to perish. And there's no sense in them perishing. With all of these half-empty lifeboats being launched, people, they need to go in the lifeboats. And don't you know, on that night when that ship went down, that people were begging and pleading with people, get in the lifeboat, get in the lifeboat. But they wouldn't do it. Listen, when we look at other people, and when we see them as living beings, as souls, God has given them an eternal soul just like He gave us one. And we're fortunate because we've already had people to share the gospel with us. We've had parents that brought us up and neighbors and others that taught us and spouses that helped us to learn the good news. And so we've obeyed that. But there are so many others that don't know that yet. They're going to go down. They're going to sink. And here we are. What's the point? We need to encourage people to learn about Jesus. We need to encourage people to know these things. If I love my neighbor as myself, I'm not going to let my neighbor go to hell. Let's go over to 1 John chapter 4. 1 John chapter 4 here, verses 20 and 21. We were just here not too long ago talking about love. Love, the epistles of John, as he gets on this issue of love. Every act of encouragement is an act of love for God. If someone says, I love God and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? And this commandment we have from him, that he who loves God must love his brother also. Must love his brother also. What are you saying there, John? John is saying that we've got to love each other. Every act of encouragement is an act of love for God. As I encourage others, as I show love to others, guess what? I'm also showing that for God. Well, let's see that with Jesus as well. Over in Matthew chapter 25, here we have this setting where Jesus is saying, I was hungry and thirsty, and I was in prison and sick, and I had all these things going on. And he's trying to show here how our actions versus non-actions make a difference. And so in this section, let's just focus on verse 40. And the king will answer and say to them, "Assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me." Did what? Well, he says, well, listen, I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me, sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. And they said, when did we do this to you? Listen to verse 40 again. The king will answer and say to them, "Assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me." I think it's so important that we realize and remember, hey, listen, we've got a part to play in this. We really do have an impact on how things turn out. I think I mentioned here a few weeks ago about my very first sermon. It was supposed to be 10 minutes in length. I'd practiced over and over. It was always 15, 17 minutes. And when I actually got there to do it, it was 6 minutes done, wrapped up. And you'll never hear another 6-minute sermon from me. But that night, I had so many people that were there. Like every living relative I had was in that building. And every preacher from like a 30-mile radius was in that building. The more I thought back on that, the more intimidated I should have been to see all those people there. But here they were. They were building me up. They were patting me on the back. They were telling me what such a fine job it was. And so these types of encouragements, these acts of encouragement are so important. Now, what happens is, if I start to withhold encouragement from others, then that lessens the opportunities for good to be done. And so it's two sides of the same coin. Listen, we need to build each other up. Why? Because when I do something good to someone else, when we do something good at the rim of the inn, when we do something good for someone stranded on the side of the road, when we pay for someone's food when they got up all the way to the counter to pay and they've left their wallet at home and they're embarrassed, and when we pay for that, listen, what you're doing is a good act, and it's a good act also that shines the light for Jesus. We can encourage people and make so much progress in life. Let's go over to Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4. One day we're going to give an account for everything and every relationship that's been placed in our care. I'm going to begin here in verse 11, and we'll get up through verse 13. Let us therefore be diligent to enter the rest, lest anyone fall according to the example of disobedience. For the word of God is living and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the division of soul and spirit and of the joints and marrow, and as a discerner of the thoughts and the intents of the heart. And there is no creature hidden from his sight, but all things are naked and open to the eyes of him to whom we must give account. We've got to give an account to God for all the things that we've been involved with. Now, if you had the choice of standing before God and having God look at you with a broad grin on his face to say, "I've been looking forward to seeing you here. Welcome, good and faithful servant. Are you ready to enter into your rest? Are you ready for your reward? You've been such an encouragement for so many people. Your life, your example, your words, your hugs, your handshakes, your notes, your kind words of encouragement and also of correction have been such an encouragement for people. That's what I want to hear. I don't want to stand before God in judgment knowing that so many hundreds and hundreds of opportunities to make other people's lives better had gone by the wayside because of selfishness on our part, so that we withheld those types of things. We're going to give an account for all the things that we do. Many of the things that we can do won't cost us a dime. The smile, the extra moment or two to stay back to encourage one who has come forward to be baptized or to rededicate his or her life. The opportunities that we have also to know that someone's been struggling with a long-term illness or is still hurting over the loss of a loved one. And those moments that we spend can be of great encouragement to them. In the same opening in my Bible now, Hebrews chapter 3, verse 13, encouragement is a daily privilege and a responsibility. This is where we were earlier in our text. Exhort or encourage one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. You know how important encouragement is? Well, it can really turn the whole course of a person's action. It really can. We're getting towards the end of the NFL season. We'll have 2 games today, and 2 weeks from now there will be a Super Bowl. I tell you, those teams didn't get there by accident. They fought their way there. they probably thought during their training camps before the season began that they had a potential for being back at this level in the season. But they had to be encouraged as well as they've gone through. Can you imagine playing for a coach, being on a team and playing for a coach, and you're getting up for a big game, and the coach comes in and he says, well, listen up. Listen up. It's all over. You know, they're bigger than we are. They're faster than we are. They're expected to win. I don't even know why you guys are suiting up, you know. What's the bother? I mean, why? Listen, just don't get hurt. Can you just do that? Just don't get hurt. And I promise you all, you know, we'll go out for snow cones after, win or lose. Well, listen, that's a little league speech there, right? That's not a speech that you encounter when you're in the battle, when you're looking for the battle, going up against that other team and everything's on the line. You want a coach that'll come in and fire you up. You want a coach that'll encourage you. You want a coach that'll help you focus so much on your goal that you'll forget about all the things that you lack and you'll only focus on the things that you possess. That coach will have you to dare to dream about what it is at the end. That's what encouragement does. What does discouragement do? Discouragement just takes it all away. Discouragement focuses on the lacks and on the deficiencies. Discouragement also feeds your mind to all these things about don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Listen, it's all negative. We need to think in positive terms to encourage one another. The writer of Hebrews says, listen, there's a way that you're going to fall from the knowledge. You're going to fall away from the truth if you're not careful. So what's the solution? Encourage one another daily. Build each other up daily. Remind each other up daily of who you belong to and of whose you are. You've got to live this type of life with encouragement. Now, just a couple others. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. A great passage here, and I know that many people use this in grief counseling, and rightfully so, 2 Corinthians 1, verses 3 and 4. God encourages us so that we can know how to encourage others. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in our tribulation, that we may be able to comfort those who are in any trouble with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. How do you know how to help some other people? A lot of it is trial and error or through our experiences. We watch others. My two younger sisters and I many times would sit in the lobby of a hospital as mom and dad would go up and visit with somebody. We were all young, you know, there's 9 years in between all three of us here. And so we would sit in the lobby of the hospital. We weren't allowed to go up to the hospital rooms, but we were there. Mom and dad would go up and make these hospital visits. We would also go to the funeral homes and be there for visitation. We were there. We saw what was going on. We knew about these elements of life. Later on, as I grew up, as I began to get interested in doing things in ministry, I looked to those examples. How do they know how to comfort us? They know by examples that they've watched. And ultimately, we know because God shows us comfort. Those of you that have experienced loss in your families in the past few months or years, you know what it's like to lose somebody that's been so special and so precious to you. But you're not the first one to do it, but it still hurts in a unique way. But you found out that others who have also lost spouses or children or parents have also come to surround you and to give you encouragement and hope. Why is that? It's all part of God's plan. How did anybody know this? Because we trusted in God, we obeyed Him, and because of those things, we have hope of eternal life. We know also that although we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we will fear nothing because God is with us. We share in these things. Back over to Hebrews chapter 10. Verses 24 and 25, church assemblies are great opportunities for us to encourage. Not only opportunities, but also it's an obligation for us. Let's go into verse 23. Let us hold fast the confession of our faith without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching. Exhorting one another, encouraging one another, building each other up in love and good works. These are all examples of what it means to be an encourager. Now, there's only one other passage, and let's go ahead and get to it right now. It's Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 10. Why have we covered all of these things? Because each and every one of us is a child of God, Each and every one of us is a child of God. We're all parts of that larger body. You know that 1 Corinthians 12, Ephesians chapter 4, all those things, the parts of the body, they all work together. When they all work together, they support each other. When one part hurts, we all hurt with it. When one part rejoices, we all rejoice with it. We are all functioning parts of the same body. And part of the function that we need to have would be the encouragement part. To keep each other up and going, focused on our goal. Positive thinking about what we can accomplish, not allowing the devil to get his foot in the door to start planting seeds of doubt and negativity to tell us, oh, you can't do that. You'll never amount to anything. Don't try that. We've done that before. It'll never work. Those people will never warm up to the gospel. Listen, we've got to trust what God says. Now, what does Paul say here in Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 10? Notice this. He says, for we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, just as God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. God has prepared us for good works. We are supposed to be about the process of doing good. And we do good in lots of ways. This church does a lot of good. This church does good through World Bible School. This church does good through service to others through these afternoon nursing home worships that we do. This church does good through the room at the end, also through our youth program and our college outreach. This church does good in so many different ways, but those are just organized programs. This church also does good and can do even better by way of encouragement. I tell you, when Carl and I first started coming here and we'd look around, there's a great sense of friendship and friendliness as we all get into our assigned seats, as we all settle in. People are genuinely happy to see each other, and that's wonderful. That's wonderful. That's an encouragement. If you're not here on Sunday, you miss out on that. If you're not here two or three Sundays, you really miss out on that. Notice these verses talking about encourage one another daily. Why? To keep us strong, to keep us positive, to keep us knowing what we can do. And not just to take the encouragement in, but also to give it to other people. Towards the end of last year, I made a challenge to you. And some of you still tell me each Sunday that you're doing this. But one of the challenges I gave you was to find five people on Sunday. Pick five people and try to say something encouraging. Be an encouragement to five people while you're here. Make the point to come and to do those things. Well, I tell you what, I think you're doing it. And I want to encourage you to keep on. If we encourage one another, we will help each other get to heaven on a more safe way. And we will have fewer and fewer people that are left behind because they've fallen through the cracks. This morning we have a song of encouragement that's been selected. And if you're subject to the Lord's invitation this morning, if you desire the prayers of this church, or if you desire to put on Christ in baptism, either way, we would encourage you to come and let your thoughts be known at this time while we stand and while we sing.